Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's Windy City Chronicle podcast. I am your host, Thomas Gibbons. On today's show, we will be joined by Jacob Infante. Jacob Infante is a Bears writer for Cover32.com, and he is also a Bulls writer for RotoDen, which is debuting in June of 2017. Very excited to have him on and get his take on the Bears draft and other Bears roster moves and the Bulls end-of-year press conference with the front office and much more. Today's show with Jacob, we will talk, again, like I said, we'll talk about the Bears. We'll get his take on his reactions from draft night and his overall grade on the Bears' newest rookies. We'll also talk of any undrafted free agents that the Bears signed that stick out to us. We'll get his thoughts on the Jay Howard signing, on Bears' much-needed depth at the defensive line. And we'll answer some other questions like, will Kyle Fuller be on the roster come week one? And do you think new tight end Adam Shaheen will impact the Bears right away like Ryan Pace thinks he says? For the Bulls, we'll talk about some takeaways from the Garpacks press conference at the end of the year. A lot of stuff to talk about there. Should Rondo really come back to the Bulls? The Bulls are always talking about getting younger and athletic. That was their phrase last year. And Rondo doesn't really fit that mold unless it's the playoffs. So I don't really know if he should come back. We'll talk about that. Is it a big mistake bringing back Nikola Mirotic? Gar Forman has stressed a lot over the past couple years of his life for Nico, and he's a restricted free agent. And the Bulls obviously have enough interest in him where they would talk about him and see bringing him back. So unless he gets a huge offer from somebody else, I think that Nico will be back in the Bulls uniform for the next coming years. And then at the end of the show, we'll say goodbye to Jacob, and I'll end the show with some Cubs stuff. Cubs lost yesterday to the Yankees 3-2. They're back with the Yankees tonight and tomorrow night on Sunday Night Baseball. So we'll look at some top performers for the Cubs so far this year. We'll talk about if Kyle Schwarber can stay in the leadoff position. Right now, Kyle Schwarber is not hitting too well. He's batting 139, but he's got a good line of 5 homers, 13 RBIs, and his OPS is pretty solid. So we'll talk if he should be in there long-term or maybe find somebody else to fit there. Is it time to panic about the starting rotation? Not a lot of low ERAs in the starting rotation. Kyle Hendricks right now has the lowest at 3.51. Not what you want to see out of your starters, considering you're defending world champions, but we'll talk about that. And then a look at the upcoming schedule ahead. So Jacob will be joining us in a couple minutes here. So first, Jacob and I will talk about our reaction on Bears draft night. Of course, the Bears traded up from 3 to 2 to grab their quarterback in Mitch Trubisky. A lot of shock to fellow Chicago Bears fans, a lot of analysts. Again, when the Bears made the trade, Adam Schefter was all over that the Bears were, you know, looking a lot at Solomon Thomas, and they could be trading up to them because Solomon Thomas is someone that the 49ers were very high on. We'll hit on his reaction, and then we'll get just an overall view with the draft. There's a lot of athletic guys that the Bears drafted, a lot of guys that Ryan Pace has backed a lot, and we'll also hit on the free agents that they've signed and any more free agents to come. All right, we're waiting on Jacob here. He's connecting. And it's minor technical difficulties. All right, Jacob will be with us in a minute. So first I'll get my reaction here. So draft night, sitting there waiting for, of course, it's 10 minutes per pick. So you're sitting there waiting for And here he is. Well, Jacob Infante will join us. Hello, Jacob.
Hi, am I on?
Yes, you are.
All right. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, no problem, Jacob. Welcome to the show. So first, we'll talk about our reactions from draft night. So let's flash back to Thursday night draft night, one of the best days of the NFL offseason.
Yeah,
what was
sure.
your reaction? What was your reaction when the Bears made the move from 3-2?
I was confused. I remember when I was watching it, I was just like everyone else. I was thinking, like everyone on TV was talking about, oh, they're going to trade up and take Solomon Thomas, and I was confused because I didn't think they would take Thomas, and they valued him that, you know, heavily. So, but when the Bears took Trubisky, it kind of blew me off course. I was excited when the move happened, and up to that point, I've been kind of against the Bears, you know, taking a quarterback that early, but I was happier with the move than I expected. I mean, they gave up a lot in the trade, but if you look back at it, and a lot of people have, it's not as bad of a trade as people think, especially if Trubisky pans out like Case thinks he will. So I think the trade-up was necessary to make sure that Pace got his guy.
Definitely, yeah. As soon as, you know, they made the trade, they went right to Adam Schefter, and Adam Schefter said, you know, the Bears have been pretty high on Solomon Thomas, and that's the guy who I think is going to go here. And that's who I thought maybe was going to go. I don't think they were going to take – they were not going to trade up to get Jamal Adams that high.
Yeah.
And if they were going to give that amount of picks, it was either for the top pass rusher next to Myles Garrett or it was for a quarterback. So
yeah.
When I heard Mitch Trubisky get called, I was first in shock. I didn't see that coming at all. You know, a lot of reports and the Bears did their homework on Deshaun Watson, and they did a lot of homework on Deshaun Kizer. So credit to Pace for keeping it under wraps. But, you know, they only met with Trubisky when they went down to North Carolina, and that was a couple months ago, and Trubisky never heard from him again. So, yeah, I was shocked at the first thought of it, but then after I sat back and we got a couple more picks down, and I finally said that the Bears finally have their quarterback.
Yeah. And like you said, a lot of people were talking about if the Bears were going to take a quarterback in number 3, it was going to be Deshaun Watson. And in hindsight, I'm kind of glad that they didn't end up taking Watson, because in my opinion, Trubisky's just a better overall prospect. And regardless, I thought that picking a quarterback would kind of be reaching for need there, but Trubisky was less of a reach, so to speak.
Yeah, and then, you know, this quarterback class wasn't that of a strong class. So, you know, the Bears could get their defensive stud at 3 and then trade back in the first, because, you know, guys like Deshaun Kizer were going to be at the bottom of the first, and they obviously liked him. But then as the draft unfolded, you saw that Watson, Mahomes, Trubisky, they all went early. So, you know, your Bears were glad that they moved up, and overall it was a good move.
I agree. And like you said, when the other quarterbacks got off the board early, I think it was kind of a panic move in a way, because not a lot of people thought that the first quarterback was going to go in the first 3 picks. Like, if a quarterback was going to go off the board, a lot of people thought it was going to be the 6th to the Jets.
Yeah, for sure.
But considering that one quarterback went off in the top 3, a lot of the other quarterback-needy teams like Houston and Kansas City realized that they couldn't just stay put and hope that, you know, a quarterback would, you know, fall to them. They had to trade up and make sure that they got their guy regardless of the price.
Yeah. And my favorite quarterback, if I wanted the Bears to get one on draft day, mine was Deshaun Watson. He had the most experience. He went to the national championship twice, and you know he just has that it factor. You know he's gonna be clutch for you. He's gonna be there for you on the game winning drive. And I mean he tore apart Alabama's defense for 2 years in a row. So that was my prospect. And at first, you know, I didn't like the Trubisky move. You know, I wasn't too high on him. You know, I saw what he could do in North Carolina. I saw what he did in his first couple years when he had just come in with, you know, no warming up, no stretching, and just and make the big play when he had to. And then when he was in the starting role, I thought he did pretty well. I mean, I didn't watch too much tape on him coming into the draft, as I probably should have, just like as my overall preparedness. But yeah. But overall, I like the move, and I think that, you know, he still needs to develop, as all quarterbacks do. And I think it's going to be good for him to sit behind Glennon, who has plenty of experience starting and sitting, and Sanchez. Yeah. I like the Sanchez move more than other people might think because of what he did with Dak Prescott last year in Dallas. So the Bears' QB room looks pretty good as well as experience.
Yeah, and like you were saying, a lot of people think that Romo played, you know, was the only, I don't know how to put this, but he played a huge role in the development of Dak Prescott, but not a lot of people realize that Mark Sanchez probably played as big of a role, if not a bigger role, from what we've been hearing. He was very influential when Prescott was taking over the starting job in Dallas.
Yes, very much so. And Mark Sanchez, he's not a bad quarterback. If you remember when he was with the Jets, he had some good string of years, especially in 2011, threw for 26 touchdowns. So, you know, he has the experience. He's a former first-round pick. He knows what the pressure's like. He knows what the city wants of their quarterbacks. So it's going to be a very good QB room come training camp.
I agree. It's going to be interesting to see how Sanchez fits in and what they're going to do with Connor Shaw, because, like, Shaw was really impressive in the preseason before he broke his leg. So it's going to be – I'm excited to see – how he factors into their plans if he's going to make the roster this year.
Yeah, the Bears staff has always been very high on Shaw. Even though he got hurt training camp and preseason, they liked his work ethic. They liked what they saw from him. And again, it's another voice in the QB room who's played at the college level and who's seen some time in the NFL. So moving on to the next point, the Bears drafted four other guys outside Trubisky. They drafted Adam Shaheen from Ashland, Eddie Jackson, Alabama, Tariq Cohen from North Carolina, A&T, and Jordan Morgan from Coostown, Pennsylvania. Jacob, who was your favorite pick outside Trubisky?
Outside of Trubisky, I'd have to say my favorite pick was probably Eddie Jackson, because a lot of the other picks were, at least on my board, they were, you know, kind of reaches, but Eddie Jackson was a good value pick, and not a lot of people remember, but before he got hurt early last year, a lot of people considered him to be a first or second round prospect. So, you know, he's definitely got the talent, and I think that if he rebounds from his injury, he could eventually be someone that they could end up starting in safety.
Yeah, I like the Jackson pick a lot. I saw him, you know, pre-draft. I saw him play at Alabama, so I obviously had him on my board as someone who is obviously would fall because of his injury. You know, he's the second or third round prospect, and the Bears got him at four. And
yeah,
you could tell Pace really liked him because he moved up to get him. You know, yeah. Jackson's your usual ball hawk. He's got good range. He's got, you know, good athleticism, and he's a threat as a punt returner, which is never bad to have.
Yeah, for sure.
So you just got to hope that off the – you know, he looked good off the ACL. You just got to hope that off the broken leg that he still has his speed and his football player in him. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, there was a lot of talk. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's competing for that free safety job come week one, just given, you know, his overall talent and coming from such a football school in Alabama and Nick Saban. I think that he's going to really surprise a lot of people if he's healthy.
I definitely agree with that. I can see him competing for a starting job this year. I think Quinton Demps is probably a lock for strong safety, but free safety, we're pretty much down to Amos and Jackson. Amos is coming off of a relatively down year compared to his rookie season, so I think Amos will start off with a starting job, but I wouldn't be surprised if Jackson were to overtake that at some point in the season.
Yeah, I agree. The free safety job is up for grabs. There hasn't been a consistent guy there in a long time. You look at Amos, look at Jones-Corte, Deion Bush was playing there last year. Didn't do too well, but he had some signs. I still like him. I think Deion Bush needs to be a really crucial role in the special teams game this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, the free safety is wide open, and now DeAndre Hall, they're going to try him at safety. So it's an open competition for that free safety spot, and I think Eddie Jackson has, you know, all these guys have the college experience, but Eddie Jackson was lucky enough to go to one of the best football schools in the country in Alabama. So I think he's got sort of an upper hand right there. But it's going to be a tough it's going to be a good competition, and I think it all depends who's going to show up at camp, who's going to get their reps in the preseason and really stand out to the coaching staff.
Yeah, for sure. And comparing, like, Jackson and Deion Bush were both fourth-round picks. So it's going to be interesting to see how they battle it out, not only with themselves but with Amos. But I think Jackson has a considerably higher upside than Bush did as a prospect, considering that, you know, like you said, Jackson has more big-game experience and he comes from a better school. And also the fact that Jackson was more highly rated as a prospect than Bush was. So I think Jackson will start off probably second string and, you know, kind of form a rotation with Amos. And if Jackson impressed enough, I could, you know, see him starting at some point of the year.
Yeah, the Bears made that Deion Bush pick last year, and I liked it. You know, he's an aggressive safety. He's got that big hit. He's not going to be afraid to come up and run fits and make tackles at Miami. So it was a good pick. I just think that they wanted more of a special teams role last year, and he really didn't do so well on special teams. Brad Biggs reported, the Chicago Tribune reported early in the year that he really didn't see the field a lot because of he wasn't contributing that much in the special teams game. So they wanted to see more of him there before he got on the field at safety. But Ryan Pace and John Fox have voiced themselves saying that Deion Bush, they see him as a potential future starter in the NFL. So they see something in him. You know, again, you got to have the big offseason. Hopefully he's put in a lot of work. He's got better at his game. He hasn't been generally good in the ball skill department. So, you know, he's got to work on that. But, yeah, free safety should be the open competition. The next next Bears draft pick that stood out to me was Adam Shaheen, tight end. Took him round two, and I never heard of the guy before. What about you?
I mean, I did a little bit of, you know, game tape on him. I didn't watch as much as I had hoped, but from what I saw, you can tell the physical traits are definitely there. He's like 6'6", about 270, if I'm correct on that.
6'6", 270, yeah, right there.
Yeah. He's a freak athlete for his size, and he's got good hands. He's a bit raw. Like, one thing I noticed is that he's not necessarily a crisp route runner yet. So that's one thing that I think he's going to have to work on as he transitions to the pros. And I don't see him starting right away, but as a long-term prospect, I like the move. I would have preferred defensive back, because I was thinking they'd go Quincy Wilson or Obi Melifonwu with that second-round pick, but nevertheless, I think Shaheen was a good pick, and it's more of a risk than the other two, but I'd say that his ceiling is significantly higher.
Yeah, I was hoping defensive back, too, considering, you know, the Bears did sign, of course, they got Demps, they got Marcus Cooper, Prince Mukamura. You know, everyone's like, do they really need a DB? Yeah, you need DBs. They need to develop guys in the system, and they had plenty of options in the second round to get one. They were sitting there at two, and they were sitting there at 36, and they had Buda Baker on the board, but they decided to trade down, and then, you know, they trade down, okay, you know, maybe they see somebody else down there with you know, they like the value, but they're not going to pick him that high. You know, yeah, Obi was there, Wilson. So the tight end blew me out of the park. It took me back in, like, the Trubisky pick. But after you sit down and watch some tape, I mean, he has such a, you know, he's so big, but he's able to move like that. You know, it just, it puts the upside factor in there, and that, you know, Pace said, you know, if we're going to draft somebody in the D2 realm, then he's got to dominate at that level. And there's no reason Shaheen didn't dominate that level. He was one of the best prospects in the D2 level coming in. And
for sure.
Even one time on ESPN, Todd McShay said tight ends to watch out for besides the top guys was him because just of his size and ability of what he could do at the next level.
Yeah, and I attended the NFL Combine this year, and I got to watch mostly the tight ends. And, you know, a lot of guys stood out to me because it's a freakishly athletic class in general, like O.J. Howard, Evan Engram, all those guys, they're all really athletic. But Shaheen really stood out to me just because the way he moved for how big he is, you know?
And it was
just really interesting to see. And I wouldn't say I fell in love with him, but I liked what I saw.
So, like, one of the questions we had in coming into today's show was, will Shaheen be an impact from day one like Pace thinks he does? I'm not gonna back that just yet. You know, let's get into camp, let's get into preseason and see how he looks. But that's why Pace drafted him. Pace, you know, he dominated the D2 level. He's a guy they had on the board. His blocking isn't that good. You know, I think that's why they got Deion.
Yeah.
They got Deion Sims. He's been primarily a run blocker. So I think he's going to be your run blocker, but Zach Miller's still your tight end number one. But it's a weapon. Shaheen's a weapon. And when you have a rookie quarterback like Trubisky, you got to put weapons around him.
Yeah, I agree there. And, like, a lot of people kind of forget about this, but the Bears are weak at wide receiver. Like, their number one right now is Cameron Meredith. And outside of him, you know, they've Kevin White, who has only played, like, four games in his two-year career, and just a hodgepodge of, you know, veterans that haven't proven a whole lot, undrafted rookies and, you know, players like that and role guys. So adding someone with the star potential that Shaheen has is definitely a great long-term move.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears have Kevin White to potentially be a number one because they were unsure of Alshon Jeffrey's future. But again, he's only played limited snaps in 2 years. Cameron Meredith showed a lot last year, you know, but he's not your number one. He's your borderline number two, maybe number three. Marcus Wheaton. Marcus Wheaton can do a lot for you in the slot. You know, he's a deep ball threat. You saw that with the offense in Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger. So that was a good move, but it's not a major move. It's just more depth-wise than Kendall Wright. Another solid move. Again, he had a lot of success with Dow Loggins back in Tennessee as the coordinator there. So Pace, he continues to make the good moves, whether it's connection with a coach on the staff or, you know, a one-year prove-it deal. That's what he did with Amukamara. That's what he's doing with Jay Howard. He's not going to go out there and sign guys to long-term contracts like what Emery did with guys like Lamar Houston. You know, he's going to make you prove it.
Yeah. And like you were saying, like, Pace doesn't do a whole lot of long-term moves. He maybe signs, like, one, two, or three guys to more than a one-year deal, and everyone else would just prove it. We're going to give you a year, see what you can do. If you do well, we'll give you more money. And I think Glennon, essentially a one-year deal, but they gave him three, and then Marcus Cooper, I believe, was a three-year deal. But other than that, most of their moves were mostly one-year guys. So it's going to be interesting to see how especially the offensive weapons mesh together this year and see if any of them prove their worth for next offseason.
Yeah, the wide receiver depth is not very good, like you said. It's now our biggest need. So unless Kevin White steps up and he becomes our number one, and then you got Cameron Meredith as your two, but you still need another guy. And I was hoping they were to pick somebody up in the draft as, you know, get a wide receiver. Cause there was plenty out there, especially guys in the later rounds, like DD Westbrook, who was there that the Bears could have grabbed. But they did some work in the undrafted free agent portion to address the wide receiver. And one of them that stands out to me is one of our talking points, what undrafted free agents the Bears signed stick out to us. One of them, obviously, is Tanner Gentry from Wyoming. I was fortunate enough, I think you were too, of interviewing him and talking to him for a little bit. He was very, very nice in that department, very open to having an interview, as he's done with a lot of other guys I've seen over Twitter. He's putting his name out there. He's putting out his worth. But overall, I like about him is, he played with Josh Allen at Wyoming, and Josh Allen is considered one of the top prospects the next year. Gentry, he's got good speed. He's got good size, good routes. And you never know with these undrafted guys. Look at Cravon LeBlanc, undrafted free agent last year, ended up starting some games for the Bears. So that's one that sticks out.
Another example of a undrafted free agent, I'm pretty sure, is Bryce Callahan a few years back. He's caught
right
in the secondary. And I can see Gentry possibly, becoming one of those guys who maybe doesn't make the opening day roster, maybe starts off on practice squad, but I could see him being a solid contributor in the NFL for years to come.
I agree. And, that's where Daniel Braverman was last year on the practice squad. And I think that Braverman is due for a big year this year. I think that he's going to finally break the mold and get into the and dress some games for the Bears. Because everyone said, that he's your slot guy. He's like Ryan, Snitzer from North Carolina with Trubisky. Trubisky liked him a lot in the slot, the short guy, get an open field and, run crisp routes. And I like Braverman. I liked what I saw last year coming out of the draft. And it just didn't line up for him to get some reps this year. But I hope to see him get some reps in games this year.
I agree with that because, I don't know what their plan is with Eddie Royal. A lot of people think he was going to be a cap casualty, but he's still on the roster as of now. And if he ends up getting cut, say, training camp or preseason, then the slot receiver is probably going to be wide open. Wheaton's going to take some reps. Braverman's going to take some reps. Kermit Whitfield, another undrafted free agent that I like, he could, make his way into that offense. But overall, I think Braverman's due for a bigger year, like you said, and Trubisky is going to feel the same way about him that he did about Switzer because they're, similar players more or less. So, again, I'm looking forward to just seeing how he does this year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that Eddie Royal situation. He was supposed to be cut. There were, even reports that he was going to be cut in the next coming days. It never happened. I'm not too sure about that. He's got $5 million that it's unguaranteed money. So if he's cut, it will save him $5 million on the cap. And I would think that he would be cut, after the draft as they start signing unrestricted free agents. But that hasn't happened yet. I don't know if they're going to see how he does in camp and preseason if he's healthy. Because they were gonna wait till he passed his physical, or pass or fail, to release him. So but when he's healthy, he's helped us out a lot. So if he's healthy, fine, put him in the mix. But it's just that I don't want him back on the roster if he's gonna be this going down with injury every other week and not helping out and be another dead guy in the locker room.
Yeah, I totally agree there because there's a lot of new young talent that's coming in, and it's Royal. But if he stays healthy, then, again, I don't see why he couldn't help out and contribute because he's proven to be a good weapon when healthy. But that's a big if because he's missed a lot of time over these past few years with injury, and I think this is going to be a make-or-break offseason for him.
Yeah, I think so, too. And if the Bears are if he's still on the Bears roster, he's got to really step it up. Another draft pick for the Bears, another shocker, a running back. They could have went a lot of places there, but they took Tariq Cohen, another Division II prospect, North Carolina A&T. He's listed at 5'6", 179 pounds. he hit the scene on Twitter, and a lot of Bears fans when he made that catch as he was doing a backflip.
Yeah.
So he's an athletic freak. But another question pick by Pace. You know, obviously he has the Darren Sproles comparison, the guy who he's going to be a threat on third and long, or he's going to be a threat in the punt return game just with his size and speed and his shiftiness. But again, another question pick by Pace that, you know, it either pans out or it doesn't. And, you know, it's a kind of a keep your job, lose your job draft overall, I think, with this one. What were your thoughts when the Bears took Cohen?
I was confused, especially because that now makes 4 years in a row that the Bears have taken a running back. And three out of those four picks ended up being in the fourth round. So it was a bit confusing considering they don't have a super reliable backup yet, but, you know, they're definitely way bigger need. And I saw Cohen going like fifth or sixth round rather than fourth. But I think the move could work. Again, I don't agree with where he got drafted, but, you know, he's got that, you know, like you said, the athleticism, the speed, just be straight up elusiveness to be, you know, Darren Sproles like threat. So, and again, Ryan Pace had Darren Sproles at his disposal when he was there in New Orleans. So maybe trying to find one of those guys that he knows that he can work with and he knows that, you know, can produce at a high level. So I don't think Cohen's going to have a huge role just as a runner. I only see him getting maybe like 3-4 touches a game, mainly because of his frame. But he could end up being a dangerous receiver out of the backfield and, you know, helping out on special teams.
Yeah, I could see him out of the backfield as a receiver, maybe even in the slot. Put him out there, let him work in space against him. Well, let him be in space against a linebacker. I think that'd be a good matchup for him. But Cohen, he brings a very different skill set than what Jordan Howard has. So he definitely will be a change of pace back. And that he can be used right away, considering just his athleticism and what he has to offer, especially in the passing game. Last pick of the Bears in the 2017 draft, Jordan Morgan, O-lineman. Goes to show you, especially for the Bears, you can never have enough O-linemen, all the injuries in the past couple of years and all the depth issues. So Morgan out of Coos Town. Another non-FBS prospect, but the Bears had him at the Senior Bowl, so they had a week with him to sit down, you know, week with him in meetings, week with him on the field, so they obviously saw what they liked. And again, O-linemen, you know, they're really tough to judge considering, you know, they're not a wide receiver or a quarterback where he made a nice throw, you know, he's got the intangibles. O-linemen, you really got to wait and see until they get on the field. But I like that the Bears – I like the Bears' pick there. And, more depth to the O-line.
Yeah. Admittedly, I had no clue who Jordan Morgan was when the Bears picked him. I was hoping for Desmond King to go in the fifth round because, you know, they hadn't done a whole lot on defense. Like, they picked Jackson, but that was their only defense pick. So when I saw Morgan, I was out to eat, and I just went, who? I had no clue who he was, but after the pick, I watched a bit of tape on him, and I see why Pace liked him, because he's definitely got the mauler style of play. He's a big guy, and he's a decent athlete, and like you mentioned earlier, Pace said that if they're going to pick a small cool guy that he's got to dominate at the next level, and Morgan definitely did.
Uh-huh.
So again, another confusing move from a value standpoint, but from a need and for what they, you know, valued, I can see the pick working out.
I agree. So it's always, again, like, it's always good to add a lineman, and you're not too sure about Bobby Massey or Charles Leno going forward. So it's good to get another guy there who can put some more depth and put a guy who can maybe potentially be, you know, work in year one or be a replacement for those veterans down the line.
Yeah.
So looking over the draft, obviously the Bears got the quarterback and they got a ball hawk in Jackson. They got an athletic tight end in Shaheem. Cohen, he's your change of pace back. And then they got O-line depth in Morgan. I graded the Bears draft as a C, just average considering that.
Yeah.
maybe only one or two of these guys are going to be impact players come week one. You know, Trubisky's going to be waiting. Morgan might not see a lot of action. So it was an average draft. What would you grade the Bears draft?
Yeah, I actually had that exact grade. I had a C on it because it was different from what Pace has done for the most part in his first 2 years. Because Pace has gone for safe value picks, and it's worked out so far, but he hasn't taken any risks, and he definitely took that with this class. You know, a lot of picks I was confused with, but again, I could see working out. Like, Shaheen, Trubisky, and Morgan, those are more long-term picks. And Jackson is probably the only one I could see having a big role in week one. Maybe Cohen, but other than that, this is more of a long-term draft than a, you know, draft that'll help you out immediately. So it's clear that Pace wasn't picking for Ryan, for Josh Fox. He was picking for whoever the next head coach is going to be.
Yeah, that's another interesting debate. You know, the report of Ryan Pace kept it quiet until an hour and a half before the draft. But, you know, John Fox did go down to North Carolina and see Trubisky. And, you know, of course, Pace was going to deny it. Of course, he said, no way. Fox was in it with us the entire time. But then, you know, you do get a hint of, you know, if Fox doesn't produce this year, he doesn't get more than three wins or maybe even more than five, that he could be out. And that means the whole staff, too. So Pace is drafting for the overall future outlook of the team, for sure, because he's got guys that are going to develop. But, you know, looking 5 or 6 years down the road, the Trubisky pick is going to make or break this Bears draft. Yeah, we might see Eddie Jackson in a big role. Yeah, maybe Cohen does well. But overall, it's going to be the Trubisky pick that's going to make or break this draft.
For sure.
So the Bears signed Jay Howard. I think it was 2 days ago. He visited Hallis Hall, met some players. I know Kyle Long tweeted about him. He's a very scary dude, and I hope he stays here.
Yeah.
So obviously he met some of the players. He met with the management. He passed his physical. He was released by the Chiefs because he had a hip injury and did not pass his physical. So that was a good sign of him coming to the Bears. But he was offered a deal and then left. And he was looking for other options. And apparently no other options came because he came back the next day and signed a contract, and he's on a 1-year deal with the Bears. Good move by the Bears. I like the pick. I like the signing. He had 5.5 sacks in 2015, only one last year. But, again, he only played half the amount of games as he did in 2015. Looking at the tape, he's big. He's aggressive. He's a hold-your-gap kind of guy. Another thing is long arms. I've seen he's made a couple tackles just by sticking out his arm, being blocked by a guard or a tackle. So he's obviously going to be – he's going to fit well next to there with Sutton and Kicks and Goldman. So obviously a good signing by Pace.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I was a fan of hoping that Howard would come to the Bears last year, I believe. And – you know, that didn't work out. He stayed with the Chiefs. But overall, I really like the move because they had ignored, you know, defensive line in the draft, and that was kind of a need for them. So the fact that they got Howard, he's a guy that they could probably plug in right away, and he could start opposite Hicks and along with Goldman. And like you say, he's a big guy. He's good athlete. He's got pass rushing upside. He's a really good run stuffer. I saw an infographic that PFF said, I think his run stop percentage was second in the league for 3-4 defensive ends last year, even with the, you know, lack of playing time due to his injury. So I think this move could possibly end up being like the Akeem Hicks signing, and he can surprise a lot of people and end up getting a long deal.
Yeah, it's another thing relating to Hicks. Hicks is obviously – he obviously produced well last year. He played really well, one of the best years of his career. He kind of rejuvenated his career in Chicago, and I think one of the next moves for Pace is to lock him up because he's a solid player for you coming down the next couple of years here. But, yeah, I think Howard starts right away next to Hicks, and you got good guys behind him. So that was – I like to sign it a lot, and we'll see how it plays out.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
All right, so I'm thinking that if Howard pans out and if Goldman can stay healthy, because that was an issue last year, the Bears front seven could end up being among in the top tier of the league, because productive, you know, McPhee's lighter, you know, faster now. Floyd's continuing to develop. They've got Willie Young and Lamar Houston for now. I don't know if Trevathan's going to start the year. From what I'm hearing, probably not. But they still have Kwiatkowski there. And adding those linebackers to their defensive line, what they've got right here, I think that, you know, they could end up being a nightmare for offenses in the NFL.
I agree. The front seven's really taking shape. And last year, I think they finished, you know, despite the 3-13 record, the defense really started to take some form toward the end of the season. They got a lot better, mostly in the front seven. The secondary was still a little bit iffy, but I think they finished seventh in the league in points allowed. So Vic Fangio, you know, he's obviously been a great coordinator. So I think the defense is really taking strides, and especially with the Howard signing and Eddie Jackson. I think the defense will be even better this year and hopefully help that offense have some slack, considering the lack of playmakers on the offensive side of the ball right now.
Yeah.
What are you going to say?
I was just going to say I pretty much agree that, you know, the defense is starting to take shape, and I think that's really important considering that their defense was really crappy, to say the least, in the Trestman era. So, again, I really like what they've been doing there.
Agreed. Hopefully we'll have a lot. It's going to be – Sorry about that.
That's fine.
All right. So moving on. Talking about free agent signings. Kyle Fuller missed all last season. The Bears have signed a multiple of cornerbacks. Do you think he will be on the roster come week one?
I do not. I think eventually they'll end up trading him for, you know, a mid or late round selection to a cornerback needy team. Maybe the Patriots. I know they just signed Stephon Gilmore, but I feel like they could be a team. They just lost Logan Ryan, and they might be losing Malcolm Butler, depending on if they decide to trade him. So I feel like Fuller could see like a career rejuvenation in New England, and the Patriots can – I don't know what picks they have, but just assuming they could probably get a six-rounder for him, which obviously isn't what you want out of a former first-round pick, but that's probably the best they could get. I mean, I think they'll keep Fuller on for, you know, training camp. They'll let him play it out and compete. But ultimately, I don't think he makes it on the opening day roster.
I thought he'd be gone sooner, considering what Fangio said in December last year, like basically ripping on him, saying that he doesn't have the want to come back. I mean, that was a wake-up call. I mean, I did not see Fangio doing that at all, calling out a player. But, I mean, that's just the guy he is.
Yeah.
So, Fuller. Yeah, so Fuller, I don't think he'll be on the roster come week one, considering all the other guys, but he could be a training camp guy, put him in the preseason. I think he has almost no trade value, considering that he didn't play a down last season. But, you're right. If some team, you know, some guy tears his ACL in the camp or they're down a man, you know, if they need one, I think Kyle Fuller might be at the top of their list. So, yeah, obviously a really, really late round pick, considering that he played down football last year and his future is really up in question.
Yeah, considering all the guys they brought in, he's going to need to have a really good, you know, off-season training program to, you know, stay on the roster, I'd say. Probably prefer trading him as opposed to cutting him so they can get something in return, but yeah, I don't think that he's going to end up on the roster either way.
Yeah, and I mean, it hurt the Bears that he didn't play at all last year, because, like, think about it. Think if he came back when he was supposed to, he could have played, what, three or four games, and maybe the Bears could have pulled something off in the draft to trade him and get a late-round pick.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you there, because that lack of certainty that we have, considering that he missed all last year, you don't know how he's going to come back from that. So I think someone will roll the dice on him, give him a really late round pick, but you know, I don't think the Bears will be willing to keep him on.
No, so we are both in consensus that Kyle Fuller will not be here come week one. And now we will transition to everyone's favorite Chicago team, the Chicago Bulls. Chicago Bulls opened the playoffs with 2 wins against the Celtics and managed to go the lows the next 4 to lose to the Boston Celtics in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Proved that Rajon Rondo, key to the Bulls, and after that they just didn't look the same. Jimmy Butler was on and off. Dwayne Wade did not do well on the defensive end, and nobody else was really hitting their shots. You know, Rondo kept that offense together. He led the Bulls. He ran the floor. So no Rondo. Bulls lost 4 straight, and that brought us to the end of the season. A lot of stuff in question. Gar Forman, John Paxson addressed the media after the playoffs, and the big report going into the press conference was that Mark Stein reported that there could be a shakeup in the Bulls front office where John Paxson resumes his day-to-day control of the team. Going in there, I saw that report and I was pretty excited. When John Paxson had his day-to-day control, he drafted well. He made some okay trades, but overall he put the roster in better positions than Gar Forman's doing right now. When you saw when you saw that report, what did you think?
You know, I thought that it would have helped because, you know, the Bulls these past 2 years have been in a state of mediocrity that I don't see how they could look at what's been going on to them right now and think, okay, we should do the exact same thing. But, you know, even if they're just denying the reports are true and they actually end up doing it, I think it would work out. Because from what I've heard, Paxson would likely be more opposed to rebuilding than Forman would, which is ultimately a move I think they need to make. But from what I heard in the conference, it doesn't look like that's the case.
No, Paxson turned it down right away. They asked, there are some reports that might be a change in management responsibilities. Can you address that? Is that going to be the status quo? And Paxson said it right away. I'm going to come out and make this clear. The setup we've had since Gar was named GM in 2009 has been the hierarchy is the same. My responsibility is reporting to Jerry and Michael. Gar's responsibility is reporting to me. And then throughout the press conference, John, he directed all the personnel to Gar. So, you know, if that doesn't tell you right away that there is no change, then I don't know what will.
Yeah. I was confused by that because, you know, obviously it might just be the fact that they've won, you know, 2 games in a row against the 1-seeded Celtics, and they kind of had that delusion in their head. It's like, oh, we won 2 games against them, then we can really hang in next year. But the reality is I don't think that was a matter of skill as it was just luck. You know, Isaiah Thomas, coming off the unfortunate timing of his sister's passing, he still played well, but the Bulls played better. But, you know, I don't think that their play in the first round reflected what we saw throughout the regular season, and I don't think that the Bulls will live up to those expectations in the coming year.
No, yeah, and the Bulls matched up pretty well against the Celtics, looking at the rosters and looking at the lineups. I mean, Rondo was obviously not going to be a shutdown on Isaiah Thomas, but if he needed to, Jimmy Butler could switch on him. And then just looking, you know, at the big man lineups, Robin Lopez was dominating down the paint, rebounding, and scoring. There's really no big man on the Celtics roster that was going to stop him. So, I mean, that was the one matchup to watch, everyone was saying, because the Bulls could upset the Celtics considering the matchup and considering you had Dwayne Wade and you had playoff Rondo after games 1 and 2. You know, the Bulls looked like they could win that game in 5 or 6, but then you lose Rondo and you have to deal with guys like Jerry and Grant and Michael Carter Williams trying to run the offense, and it just it didn't work as the same way Rondo did.
Yeah, I agree there. Rondo definitely played a crucial part in their success in the first two games. Obviously, comparing first two games to their final four games is kind of comparing apples and oranges because offense, you know, didn't run as efficiently and they just couldn't get things done. They looked lost without having a bona fide starter at point guard.
Yeah, so again, they traded for Cameron Payne in the trade deadline. And, you know, Gar and Pax voiced their liking of Payne. They were high on him when he came out of the draft, when he was in the draft a couple of years ago. And they dropped one of their famous quotes saying that Payne could be their future point guard. But down the stretch of the season, Payne was in a suit in the playoffs. He didn't make an appearance because, you know, Fred Hoiberg just refused to play him. He went against the front office and did not want to play Payne because he wasn't ready. And then John Paxton addressed it in the end of the season press conference saying, you know, Payne just has to get in shape. You know, he knows what's expected. He just got to get better. And Hoiberg said that he was making strides in practice. So I think, looking ahead, point guard is obviously a big need for the Bulls. They need someone there, even though Cameron Payne, maybe he pans out, maybe he doesn't. They need a point guard because they haven't had one since the healthy Derrick Rose. And I think another draft need for the Bulls is the big man position, especially now with Taj gone. You got Robin Lopez. Felicio's a restricted free agent. Some other pick him up. But looking down the line, it's like football. You got to put guys in the system and you got to develop them.
Yeah, for sure. And
so
man, I haven't really done a whole lot of looking into the draft's prospects as I have for, say, like the NFL draft, but I know that I'd say three biggest needs that they have, like you said, point guard, big man, and three-point shooting, because, you know, they've been lacking having that perimeter shooter so far this year. Like, they got rid of McDermott, who's probably their best three-point shooter, and outside of that, they haven't really had anyone who's been consistent. Like, I'm pretty sure I saw that Butler was their best three-point shooter this year, so that's something they should, you know, keep in mind when they're on the clock in, I think, a month or so. I think that's when the draft is.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Paxson said, you know, he said it himself, we need to get more athleticism, better shooting. And, you know, you can say that, but the Bulls have a history of saying things and not getting done. I mean, look at last season.
Yeah.
They said we're going to get younger and more athletic, and they signed Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade. So you got to see how it all pans out because the Bulls front office doesn't have, you know, the repertoire of making these big moves or really updating the roster for a playoff run. Okay, go ahead.
I was just saying that I agree. That's pretty much it.
Okay, so next point. Gar Forman expressed his liking of Nico Mirotic as he's had since he came over here. Nico's really been, you know, he's been up and down just way too much considering that I would want him coming back next year. I wrote an article on my website a while back. I think it was when he was in that big month of March. I even wrote during the big month of March that he should not be back next season, just given his inconsistent play, and he's not a good defender. Besides outside shooting, he really doesn't have any big parts to his game. You know, given his size, he should be able to do something in the post, and he just hasn't. So I think it'd be best for the Bulls to move on, but, you know, Gar Forman doesn't think so. You know, he talked about his strong part in March, up and down in April, and even in the playoffs, but he said, quote, "We value Nico. We see him as a 25-year-old, 6'10" guy who can shoot. He's got to get better in certain areas. We had a really good conversation with him on Saturday. Nico made it clear that he wants to stay in Chicago. He's comfortable here. His family's comfortable here. We made it clear, and we would like for him to stay in Chicago." So, I mean, that just hints that, you know, unless Nico gets a huge offer sheet from another team, that he's going to be a Chicago Bull. And I don't like that one bit. What do you think?
Yeah, I personally don't think that Mirotić should be on the roster next year because, you know, like you said, outside of shooting, which has been inconsistent throughout his run here, especially this past year, he doesn't really have a whole lot to his game. He's a liability on the defensive end. You know, like you said, he doesn't really have a whole lot in the way of post offense. So he's pretty much just a big man who can shoot. And this year he didn't really prove that he could shoot all that well. So I don't really see what value Foreman thinks he has that he's worthy of getting extended. So, in all, I just don't think that it's the right move. Let someone else overpay for him while, you know, he just would see it better in other ways.
Yeah, or let some other team pick him up and turn him into something. You know, the Bulls haven't, you know, really, they've had trouble developing guys, whether it was in the Hoiberg era so far, they've had trouble developing guys. You know, Nico could go somewhere else and all of a sudden become a really good player, and that'd be good for him. But the Bulls is not the best place for him considering, you know, how they have developed talent. And he just doesn't fit what, you know, they want, what Paxson wants. He wants better shooting and athleticism. And Nico isn't that much of an athlete, and his shooting has been inconsistent. So another reason to move on from him is because they got guys behind him who really need to play more. And Bobby Portis, Paul Zipser. They really like Fred Hoiberg. Loves Paul Zipser, and I didn't mind Paul Zipser last season. You know, he had some good games, but overall, he's just got to get better and develop more. Denzel Valentine, I love the Denzel Valentine pick. I was really upset that he didn't play a lot last season until, you know, after the All-Star break, but, you know, he really didn't have time to, you know, get his stride going considering his inconsistent rotation. So Nico doesn't fit the long-term plans, in my opinion, and when Gar says that he's 25 and he still has time to develop, yeah, he's still young, but he hasn't developed in his time in Chicago. He hasn't made any huge strides. I do not see what they see in him.
Yeah, he's been at pretty much the same level throughout his, you know, first couple of years here. And I think that it's about time that they start giving more minutes to Bobby Portis to that spot instead, because, you know, Portis hasn't had a whole lot of time to shine, but he's had his flashes, and he can prove that he could play at a starter level if they just give him the chance. But considering Mirotić's inconsistency, I think it's about time they move on from him and start to look for other options.
Yeah, I'm a huge supporter of Bobby Portis. I mean, I love what he did when he showed up in game one. He's obviously worked on his outside shot. He can shoot the three ball, even though I really don't want him focusing on that. I'd rather have him as, you know, the low post presence. But if he can shoot, I mean, that's even better for us. Turn this into the next point. Do you want Rajon Rondo back?
That's a tough question because throughout most of the year, he wasn't really, you know, he didn't live up to his, you know, past reputation, but especially in the playoffs, he really kicked it up and he proved that, you know, if he's on his game, he could be someone that the team can rally around and that they can focus their offense on, you know? So I think they bring him back. You know, some other teams might want to go after him, considering how hot he was in the first round. But ultimately, I think the Bulls bring him back, probably not for too long, maybe another one-year deal or two-year deal, but I think he's got it.
Yeah, the Bulls hold a team option for Rondo. So, and then I think next the contract is like half the money's guaranteed for next year, so it's not that, you know, obviously people were frustrated with Rondo. He got benched because he had an altercation with an assistant coach, just a verbal altercation, and he just continued to prove that he has problems with the coaching staff and his attitude, you know, cannot be kept under control. So when it came to the deadline, I wanted the Bulls to find a suitor for him or just buy him out because I really didn't want him on the team anymore, considering that they wanted to develop young talent and he was just standing in the way. But then all of a sudden we come playoff time and Rondo's injury was some of the worst news we've had in the playoffs since Derrick Rose.
Yeah, for sure.
You got any other talking points for the Bulls?
Let me think. Not necessarily. That's pretty much all to cover at this point besides draft options. But again, I haven't really done a whole lot for that. Like, I know there's some possibilities out there. Like, if they want to go big man, I know Bam Adebayo out of Kentucky, I believe, and Harry Giles or Giles from Duke could be an interesting prospect there.
Yeah, I obviously got to do my homework more on the NBA draft coming up, so I'll definitely look. And you know, it's not really a big class. So again, if the Bulls want to get their big impact player, you know, will they trade Jimmy Butler? They did not say. You know, they said at the press conference that all options are on the table, as they always should be.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at it, you know, the Bulls say they want to retool. They want to get younger. Are they really retooling if they keep Jimmy Butler? I know he's still young. He's a superstar in the NBA. He's what they got going for him right now. But if you really want to hit the rebuild button and hit the reset and start building this team to make a playoff run and start getting younger, and if you really believe in Fred Hoiberg, are they gonna pull the plug? I know last year during the NBA draft it was hectic. You know, they were like, oh yeah, the Minnesota Timberwolves are becoming really big suitors for Butler, and they even said there was an offer on the table. So it's going to be interesting. I think draft night again is going to be a big stir for the Bulls and leading up to it. But ultimately, I don't think they trade Jimmy Butler. I think they're going to keep Butler and do their best to trade around him, considering they got some young promising guys on the roster. Again, I like Paul Zipser, Bobby Portis. I really believe in Denzel Valentine. So we'll see if Garn Pax can finally pull it off. But again, going in, I think this could be their last chance. I know that Jerry Reinsdorf is really loyal to his guys that he puts in charge. But if they have another bad season, I think it's time to clean house.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think the best choice is, you know, getting rid of Butler and trading him for some valuable assets. I don't think they will do that. Like, this process is kind of similar to what the White Sox have done the past couple of years. Like, up until this past offseason, they've been mediocre, been on the border making the playoffs, but haven't really done anything, and they've just been adding veterans, signing them in free agency, and trading. But ultimately, rebuilding was the best choice for them, and they got rid of Sale, and they traded Adam Eaton, and they got a lot of really good prospects in those deals. And I think the Bulls should do something similar to that, because they have their Chris Sale in Jimmy Butler. He's one of the best players in the NBA today. Incredible work ethic, just a great all-around player. And they could get a lot for him. Like, they could get a couple building blocks, get some draft picks. I think that would be best for them in the future. But if they really want to win now, I think they'll keep him, which is what they'll do, in my opinion.
Yeah. Rick Hahn and the White Sox, they said, you know what, we're done trying to compete and try to rebuild at the same time. We're cleaning house. And they traded Sale and they traded some other guys. And so far their prospects have been, you know, pretty good down in the minors. You know, they got Tim Anderson going for them. They got the Garcias in the outfield. So, you know, it doesn't look too bad. And the Cubs did it. You know, the Cubs said, you know what, we're done. We're going to start rebuilding. We're not going to have a lot of good seasons, but stick with us. And they ended up getting a world championship. So, again, the press conference out of the press conference, you know, you really didn't get direction. You didn't get a lot of change. There was no change in the front office. There's no change in the coaching staff as of yet. You know, it's more just staying constant. You know, we liked what we saw in the playoffs in the first two games. And, you know, we're gonna stay constant. We're gonna keep going. We're going to stay the path. And I don't think that's the right move. You know, it's another bad presser from the Bulls. It's another unsettling time for a fan. You know, what is this team going to do? What is your favorite basketball team going to do, you know, considering that this front office is still here?
Yeah, I don't – like, I agree. There's very little direction to the franchise at the moment. You don't know what they're going to do. And the press conference, it had its, you know, tidbits of useful information, but ultimately they said a lot without saying anything. So, you know, again, we don't know what they're going to do. My assumption is they keep trying to contend, maybe for another year, maybe longer. But, again, I think that the best option for them long-term is just tearing it all down and starting over.
Yeah, and they even, you know, John Paxson's like, you know, blowing it up is not as easy as it is. But, and I mean, essentially, I mean, if the Bulls do like some of their young guys, you know, you trade Jimmy, you get some more younger assets in return. And, you know, if you do keep Rondo, you know, Rondo has been so good with the young guys. That's like his claim to fame in the regular season was just his influence on the young guys, you know, taking them out to dinner, having them over to his house, spending time with them in the summer league. So that's another reason I think Rondo will be back, just because he was so good with the young guys, and I think the front office likes that. But, yeah, we'll see come draft night if the Bulls do trade Jimmy Butler, but I think they made it clear. I don't really think they're going to trade Butler like they had aspirations of last year. But you never know. If someone puts an offer on the table, you know, and the Bulls are like, all right, we're going to go for this, then we won't see Jimmy Butler in a Bulls uniform.
Yeah. I agree with you there, pretty much, yeah.
All right. So that was finished our Bulls segment. As I transition to the next part of the show, I'm going to say – goodbye to Jacob. Jacob, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed being here. Again, I'd like to do this again at some point if you'd be interested. And you know, I really enjoyed being here and talking Bears and Bulls.
I totally agree. You gave some great stuff. We had great conversation, a lot of great talking points, a lot of looking forward to the future, and a lot of looking at the now. So thanks for having on.
Sure.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
See you.
Yep.
That was Jacob Infante of Cover32.com. Covers the Chicago Bears. And he will be covering the Chicago Bulls for Rotoden.com, debuting in June of 2017. Great stuff from Jacob. We will definitely have Jacob back on the Windy City Chronicle podcast in the near future. Great stuff from him. Really enjoyed his stuff. He's also a great writer, too. You got to go check out his Twitter and Cover32. Great writing, great stuff. He is on Twitter at JacobInfante24. JacobInfante24. So for the last about 20 minutes of the show here, we're going to transfer, talk some Cubs. The Cubs lost last night, lost yesterday to the Yankees, 3-2. And, yeah, Aroldis Chapman shut out. Got the save versus former team. It felt weird seeing Aroldis Chapman on the other side of the on the mound. Really weird seeing Chapman up there, considering that he was in a Cubs uniform just not so long ago. Cubs are back at it tonight versus the Yankees, 7:15 Eastern. It will be Brett Anderson for the Cubs and Jordan Montgomery for the Yankees. I do not know if the lineup has been released yet for tonight. Take a look. Yep, the lineup was released about an hour ago, so we'll have a shakeup here. There is no Kyle Schwarber in the lineup tonight. We'll have Ben Zobrist hitting leadoff in right field, Chris Bryant, Rizzo, and Russell, 2, 3, 4. Contreras is your catcher. He's hitting in the fifth spot. Almora is in center tonight at 6. Javi Baez at 2nd. Brett Anderson in the 8th spot. And John Jay in left hitting 9th. Another lineup shakeup this year. Again, no Hayward or Schwarber in the lineup. So I like the lineup. I like Ben Zobrist in the leadoff spot whenever you can get a chance to put him there. John Jay is hitting 347 so far this year. And, yeah, good average for him. Madden really likes what he's done so far, and I like what I've seen from John Jay. He's going to get you on base. He's driven in a few runs this year, so it's good to see him in the lineup tonight versus the Yankees. So no Kyle Schwarber in the leadoff spot, but we're obviously going to talk about, is Kyle Schwarber a good guy in the leadoff spot? Should he stay long-term in the leadoff spot? And I like him in the leadoff spot. You know, Schwarber's your guy. He's your typical cleanup hitter. You know, get guys on base, and Schwarber's going to hit. He's going to drive you in with a knock, or he's going to hit that power. He's going to get that power getting for a home run over the Budweiser sign. But so far in the leadoff spot, I like what I've seen from him. So far this season, you know, he's only batting 193, but that's definitely going to get up. He's hit 5 homers, he's got 13 RBIs, and he's got 17 walks. 17 walks is second on the team to Chris Bryant, who has 19. That is very, very good for a leadoff hitter. You know, his OPS, right? His OPS right now is 679, which is really good. I mean, just phenomenal number for a leadoff hitter. So his average might be down, but he's getting on base, and he's getting on base for Bryant and Rizzo, who's hitting behind him. So that's what I like the most, what I've seen from Schwarber, is his patience and drawn walks. You know, he's not swinging for the fences like he did a lot last season or like he did a lot last season or the year before. And, you know, he's become more of a patient hitter. He's seeing balls better. But the question, going back to the question, should he stay in the leadoff spot? I really think that he's a good fit for the leadoff spot right now and for the short future. I don't know if he's going to be there all year. You know, Madden likes to shake up his lineup a lot and put guys in different spots and test some guys in different spots. And that's what kind of the beginning of the season is. You're going to test guys. You're going to see where they fit. Because once you get down to the latter part of the season, you got to find a lineup that fits. You got to put your guys out. You got to put the guys out there every single day in the same lineup and, you know, get it going, get amped up for the playoff run. But going back, yep, I think Kyle Schwarber is a good fit for the leadoff spot. You know, he's not your typical leadoff hitter. You know, he's not your Dexter Fowler. But he's obviously getting on base. He's hitting. He's getting guys. He's driving guys in from the leadoff spot. So I like what I see there, and I think the value of him being there is really good for the Cubs lineup day in, day out. Next point, is it time to panic about the starting pitching? Running down the starting pitcher's ERA so far this year, Kyle Hendricks at 3.51, John Lester 3.67, Jake Arrieta 4.63, and John Lackey is above 5. Brett Anderson at 6.23. It's concerning to say the least. You know, you see these guys who did so well last year and they're World Series champions, and I think the Cubs rotation had the best ERA in baseball, and all of a sudden you look at these numbers and you're like, what happened? Well, last season was lawn. They had a lawn. They went all the way into October, and then they're back at it again in spring training just a couple months later. So it's obviously they're, you know, still tired arms, and especially Kyle Hendricks has the tired arm because they, as Alex and I talked about in the first Windy City Chronicle podcast, the Hendricks got a lot of pitching. Alex Pat, who I had in the last episode, he's also a writer for Windy City Chronicle. Follow him on Twitter at ShyFanPat1. Me and Alex talked about Kyle Hendricks. You know, he got a lot of pitching in spring training. So he still could have, you know, a tired arm, a dead arm, and his velocity has been down. But obviously Joe Maddon is not that concerned. He had a good outing last time. Jake Arrieta, despite the high ERA, had a good outing the other day. He got the win. John Lester. Lester's been, you know, a little shaky, but Lester got his first win against the Phillies back on May 2nd. Him and Contreras is now his personal catcher, so that was good to get the first win out. Get the first win in the new pairing, considering Lester does not have David Ross anymore, who's become a Dancing with the Stars hit. He is not Lester's catcher, so now Contreras is taking the duties. What they do is Lester and Contreras, they go back and they watch every single pitch from the outing. You know, they study it over, they talk, they're always working together. So it's a good pairing. It's a good relationship so far, and there's been no complaints so far on either side or no concerns of what's going on there. So I think Lester will definitely pick up his ERA as the season goes on. Again, it's only the first couple, you know, so we're only starting out the season. It's not like it's August where we got to really hit the panic mode if the ERAs are that high or the starting pitching has not been what it should be. So, no. And it's not time to panic about the ERAs. You know, once you get that ERA in a hole, it's hard to dig back out. You got to get a couple more starts of low runs to really get that ERA out of a hole. But it's not time to panic. You know, I know the first inning of this season so far has been rough for the pitching. You're not getting up to good starts. You know, they're giving up, especially Lackey. You know, Lackey's giving up a couple runs in the first inning. But, you know, he's settled in. You know, it's just about, you know, going out there and getting and and being good from day one, being good from inning one. The Cubs got to get out there and get better starts under their belt, get better starts pitching-wise. The bats have been really good, really, really good, especially from guys like John Jay off the bench and Hayward. We'll get into Hayward in a little bit, but Hayward's progress has been good. So starting pitching just has to circle back to what it did last year. Got to settle down. And I think one way to do that is getting spot starts for guys, getting some guys some rest, especially because you got guys in the bullpen who can do that. You got Mike Montgomery who can do some spot starts. And he'll just bring up some guys from the minors to get some spot starts. And I think that's what Alex and I talked about last time too, was the Cubs should get some guys some rest and get some guys some more days off, because especially from the long season and the high ERAs, that we could see some more time off for guys, and I think that'd be best. Jason Hayward. Jason Hayward has done a total 360 from what he did last year. His, you know, obviously the spring training and before, he worked on his swing a lot in Arizona. I think he even moved down there to work on him because he wants to get better. And again, credit him for the rain delay in the World Series Game 7. He brought the team together, and he was a leader. He is a leader. He's an outstanding fielder. His bat just didn't come around last year, but so far he's doing really well. Right now, Hayward, he's got 3 home runs, 17 RBIs. He's hitting .253 with an OPS of .697. Good numbers from Hayward. I've really liked what I've seen out of him this year. Just his approach and not swinging at the balls that he was swinging at last year. So very good progress there. And, you know, his fielding is always going to be great. Always going to be great stuff. So, again, his plate appearances have been much improved, very much improved. And that's a really good sign for the Cubs because, you know, when you got guys like Rizzo and Bryant who are going to have the occasional bad days where they can't see the ball, they're not seeing pitches right, they're not getting contact. Last year you probably had a little bit of a freak out, like who's going to be our production now? And you always had Zobrist, but what if he falls down too? So now you got Hayward to look at, where last year you'd be like, who's going to help us now if these guys are not doing well? Hayward's not. But now this year you can look at Hayward and be like, he's going to help us out. He's got a lot better. Really, really 360 turn from last year. Another guy who's had a really, really great start to the year is Albert Almora Jr. I have liked Almora ever since he was one of our top prospects in AAA. He had great stuff down there. You know, there's always been some question about his hitting. I think he's always been known as the solid fielder, and he's shown that. But his hitting, is he going to be able to keep up his hitting production in the majors? So far this year, he's got 2 homers, 8 RBIs. He's batting .281 with an OPS of .795. So good stuff from Almora so far. I've really liked what I've seen out of him as well. He's a really good base runner. That's, I think, one of the underrated parts of his game is his base running. He's turned singles into doubles or some stolen bases or just reading the bases really well, whether it's a tag up or stealing bases. I think his base running has been very underrated. And I think even Madden has talked about that, of just, you know, that's what he brings. You know, he's not going to bring you the power like Rizzo or someone like that, but he's going to bring you the base running, and his baseball IQ is very, very high. So, again, another guy who is not going to start every day, considering the other outfielders you have, you know, the usual Hayward, Zobrist, and Schwarber has been the big outfielder pairing so far. But you got guys like Almora and John Jay who are on your bench who you are very confident in, as I'm very confident in, seeing in the lineup or seeing, you know, in the bottom of the ninth situation, putting them in there to get on base or drive some runs in or put as a pinch runner. I'm very confident in Almora there too. So, yeah, very good depth for the Cubs so far, especially Montero too. Montero is doing well. He's hitting .385, 3 homers, 5 RBIs. Again, he's not seen a lot of time like Contreras has, but again, Montero is still proving that He's going to be your quality backup catcher, and he's always been one of the, he's always been a solid guy, and he's a guy you look to, and especially his pitch, his catching. You know, he's all with, you know, the Cubs brought him in because, you know, he's a good pitch framer. He's good behind the plate. He can throw guys out just like Contreras. So, you know, so far, you know, you're looking at the Cubs roster and you're looking at that hitting, looking at the depth they have, and it's really, really good. And Caesar, Matt Scherzer, got some time. Got some time for Phillies, so that was good for him. The guy, you know, on the bench who's gonna, you know, he can deliver some hits for you. So far the Cubs have been very, very good in the hitting department. Again, the depth is just phenomenal. With the mix of veterans and rookies, young guys, Amor is not a rookie. But, you know, you can just the mix and match lineups that you can have, and you can put the mix and match lineups that you can put out there, and you say, yeah, I'm confident in this. And the fans are like, yeah, I can get behind this. Because, you know, if anything goes wrong, look at that. Like today. Today you're starting John Jay in left and center field. You got Amora. You need some runs, man. You put in Hayward and Schwarber. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. It really is great. It really is good to see the lineup. The lineup shifting and the depth that this Cubs team has. It's a credit to the front office. It's a credit to the players themselves. And it's a credit to Joe Maddon for his lineup, his being the lineup guru that he is. The starting pitching has not been great, but then you go to the bullpen, and the bullpen has been, again, next to hitting, the strong point of this Cubs team so far. The bullpen has been just phenomenal in the past, in the reach. And you got Wade Davis leading the way with a zero ERA. Wade Davis did not have a good spring. And Jesse Rogers, via Dom, talked about how he was unsure of how Davis would start in the regular season. Because, you know, Rogers, you know, you always see guys struggle in the spring training, and then it takes him a while to the season comes that, you know, he has to still work it out. But Wade Davis, man, he came out firing, and he proven that he's one of the best closers in the league. In 13 and a third innings, he only has 4 hits allowed, 4 walks. He's got 15 strikeouts. I mean, he's been phenomenal. He's just continuing to prove and prove again of just that he's one of the best closers in the league. And, I mean, looking back, that was an awesome trade the Cubs made with Soler being the centerpiece of that trade, getting Wade Davis. And then you got Carl Edwards Jr. to complement Davis. Edwards has an ERA under 1. Montgomery has settled in. He's got an ERA of 1.29. And then other guys in the bullpen, Koji Uehara, Rondon, Strope. Strope is not, you know, he's not done so well so for the start of the year. Rondon has not done well. Koji, really, I don't know about my expectations of Koji coming in. Really wasn't that high. I know he won the World Series with the Red Sox, but, you know, coming in, the big guys I was looking for, again, for the returning Cubs are Strope, Rondon, and Edwards to really lead the way, and Montgomery, too. So, and Strope and Rondon have not played their big part yet. And it's still early again, like I said, with the pitching. So, you know, you're seeing what guys are going to fit in the bullpen, and you're seeing who are your 4 or 5 guys that you're going to trust through the end of the season. And that's still in fluctuation. You're going to have Edwards right now. Edwards is a setup man with Wade Davis as a closer. But who's going to be that guy who has to come in the 4th or 5th inning? I mean, what are you going to put Montgomery there? That'd be my first option. But, you know, who's going to be next after Montgomery? It's still up in the air. Are you going to put Koji for an inning? You're going to get Strope. Rondon, you know, you're looking, you know, they've been great as of late, but when you look toward more of the end of the season, you know, you're going to have your set guys. And if you're still kind of trying to find that, that's not good. So maybe there's someone in the minors that's going to step up, like Carl Edwards Jr. was when he came up. You know, he was out of the minors, and all of a sudden, you know, he found a stride in the MLB. Now he's won. He's been a great piece for the Cubs and just a great setup guy and potentially a future closer in the MLB. So the bullpen's got to start. Bullpen, as it has in past weeks, is starting to take really good shape. But those ERAs are still pretty high, and you want to see less home runs given up. When you're looking at home runs, two from Rondon, two from Strope, none from Davis. Awesome. Edwards only has one. Koji, none. But Koji's ERA is not where you want it to be, considering his recent success and his stat line of years past. Again, he's getting up there. You know, he's getting his arm is seen a lot, but you still want to see more out of him. So again, that goes like starting pitching. You know, you want to get some fillers in the starting rotation. Well, get some guys from the minors. Get those guys up. Get them some time because you still want to see who you're going to rely on come the end of the season. As we're ending the closing minutes of here of this podcast, thank you all, everyone who joined in. Thanks all for listening in. And again, you can always view this podcast in the recent podcast section of the Windy City Chronicle podcast. I will post this to my website for anyone who wants to go back and listen. We have some great stuff today from Jacob Infante of cover32.com. Really brought in another insight, another view. And he had the privilege of going to the NFL Combine this year. He interviewed Tanner Gentry just like I did. So he's a great, great guy. Great guy, great writing, and great view of the Bears. And we also talk Bulls. You know, he's just like me. You know, what direction is this Bulls front office going? You know, what are we going to see from the Bulls next year? Are we going to see the same thing? Because what they said, you know, it looks like it's going to be the same roster makeup. And that's not what a lot of people want, especially Nico Mirotic, if he's still in a Bulls uniform next year. And then the Cubs, you know, talked about Jason Hayward, his strides, Kyle Schwarber in the leadoff spot. I think that's still going to work. I think they should stick to that for now. I think his OPS is just something you can't shy away of his success in the leadoff spot, despite the average, it's dipped under 200. The bullpen's taking its stride. It's really hit its stride in the past couple weeks, been really strong. The starting rotation still needs to get its ERA better, still needs to get some better quality starts under their belt, but I think there's no panic mode. There's no need to panic. They are going to be just fine. Cubs in action tonight against the Yankees. Yesterday, Adam Warren, Chapman got their World Series rings. Starlin Castro had a standing O and a video tribute on the big board. Starlin Castro was one of my favorite Cub players. He was one of those guys where that's all we had to watch for a couple of years until we got Anthony Rizzo, because the Cubs were just so bad. You know, sorry, Castro was the bright spot. And I'm still following Castro on the Yankees. He's doing really, really well this year. He's hitting over 300. I think he's got like something like five homers, maybe. I don't know if he's over 15 RBIs yet, but a good year. It's good to see Castro doing well. And, I mean, you wish, you hope that he would be able to stick on the roster for the World Series run, because he definitely earned it. But he just didn't fit. So that will wrap up today's Windy City Chronicle podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Gibbons. And tune in for next week's Windy City Chronicle podcast. The plan is to do these podcasts every Saturday. A multiple of guests, whether it's our WindyCityChronicle.com writers or guys like Jacob Infante, guys who are out there in the Twitter world doing the same thing I am here, writing, doing podcasts, and guys that just voice different opinions than our writers do or than I do myself. So thank you all for tuning in. And we'll see you next Saturday.